there. I'm board-certified professional organizer Kathy Burns. I'm really glad you're here. This podcast is designed for busy entrepreneurs just like you who want to take better control of your business and move forward with less stress and more success. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Organize Energize podcast is produced for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at thepodcast.organizeandenergize.com. Come back often and feel free to add this podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Organize Energy and Facebook. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Organize Energize podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Milo Shapiro. Milo is a public speaking skills coach, and he's a member of the, for the past 20 years of the National Speakers Association. He has motivational speaking and team building, speaking and work. And in the coaching side of his business called Public Dynamics, Milo meets with individuals, mostly over Zoom, developing more prepared, polished, and powerful speakers, whatever their need. Clients range from CEOs at Sharp Healthcare and Precision Dynamics to entrepreneurs, community leaders, middle managers, and sales reps. Milo also presents the lively keynote, Puppy Speaking, Get A's, Not Z's. Let's jump into it. It's going to be a fun podcast. And let's meet Milo. Hi, everybody. I'm here with Milo Shapiro, and we're going to talk about speaking, how you can make an impact speaking, and learn how to use dynamics in public, yeah, with publicdynamics.com. So welcome, Milo.
I love when you jump right to the website like that. I usually have to hope it comes in later, publicdynamics.com right there. Thank you.
Yeah, why not? Hey, I'm glad to have you here. You know, we've known each other for what? Oh gosh, I don't know, 18 or plus years?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, I think actually more.
Could be.
Well, I started the company that led to my speaking business in 2000. I think I met you shortly after that. So we'll let the guests do the listeners do the math.
It's been a while. Yeah. We won't say how old we are or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, talk to me, Milo. Tell me about your beginnings. What's the beginnings of your career as a public speaker or as a speaking coach?
Kind of a funny story. Yeah. Because it was the last thing I thought I was going to be doing when I started my business. I was an IT guy. So COBOL programming, like ancient world stuff from 85 to 2000. And during that time, I fell in love with improvisation. So all of my evenings and my weekends, even in my vacations, traveling the West Coast and up into Canada, studying with some of the masters of improv, that was my whole passion. But, you know, who quits their job to do improv? Well, in 99, they offered us voluntary separation packages if we would leave after a merger when there was too many people. And a couple of years before that, when this new thing called websites came out, I don't know if you've heard of them, but in 97, they were new. Somebody told me about a website for a company back east that was doing team building for improv. And I don't know what was on my desk at that moment, but I stopped doing it. I was like, what? Improv team building? And I started looking at their website, and it all made such sense because improv teaches us listening skills, building on each other's ideas, creative problem solving. And I was looking over their site, and they actually said what games they would play. I was like, good choice, good choice. Oh, not a good choice. I would do that. And I just made a little list for myself. Like, if I ever did a team building course, what improv games would I put in it? And I shoved that in a drawer because who quits their job to do an improv company? Well, when they offered the separation package, I was like, if I don't do this, this is going to be one of those deathbed things that I spent 45 years doing IT and regretted that I didn't do what I felt passionate about. So I started my company, Improv Ventures, doing these team building events. And after not too long, people in the classes were saying, this is really powerful stuff, but don't just do it with like 15, 20 people at a time. Do it for big crowds, like a motivational speaker, and get them all playing these games because we're learning a lot. And I said, I can't just play games with a crowd and call that a motivational speech. Well, I said that to someone at an improv festival and he laughed. I said, why is that funny? He goes, you don't know who you're talking to, do you? I said, I know you represent the Las Vegas team and I'm here from the San Diego team. And he said, I'm also the president of my chapter of the National Speakers Association. And yes, you absolutely can lead the crowd in improv games. You just need to couch it in a speech about something. And you don't know how to do that yet. Join your local chapter of National Speakers Association. So I did and got involved and learned how to develop a keynote and developed a keynote where for about half the time, I get the audience playing in a speech about moving past the fear of failure, not being so tied to being perfect and being willing to make mistakes and learn from them. Because in improv, we can't be perfect. If we try to, we do terrible improv.
Yeah.
So that took off and I became 80% speaker, 20% team builder, but I was having fun with it. The speaking was fun. And then the unexpected happened. People kept lingering after my speeches and saying, would you work with me on my speaking skills? Would you come and work with my staff? And I kept saying, no, I don't do that. I mean, I've had lots of training from Toastmasters and from National Speakers Association, but helping other people, it's not what I was trained to do. But this one guy was really insistent. He said, I really think you're the one who has to help me, and I'm in a real hurry. It's important. I said, what's going on? He said, I sell on QVC. 90% of our company's sales is QVC, and they told us we're not selling enough for their standards, and they're going to cut us if I'm not better in 2 weeks and sell more. Yeah. So he came over with a stack of VHS tapes and we watched him on QVC. And I was like, oh, yeah, I see things you're doing wrong. We can help you. Okay. I mean, even though I didn't have a background in coaching and I worked with him, I think 3 times, he flew back to Pennsylvania for his 7-minute time slot. Everything on QVC is 7 minutes. And 5 minutes into it, long story short, he sold out his entire product line. She said afterwards, you were completely different on camera. I'd never seen this side of you before. What did you do? And he said, oh, I hired a coach. I said, did you give them my card? Because that could have been life-changing for me, but he didn't. Too bad. But I said, I guess I should put this on my website. And that took off. And now I'm probably 80% coach, 15% speaker, 5% team builder. But I'm still happy whichever one rings on the phone. So that's how it happened.
Right. You get to do all three things that you love, which is fantastic. Yep. You know, and that's what I find interesting is that, you know, when we follow our passion, then it leads into things that will make us money. I think it's inevitable.
I didn't see it coming, but yeah, I think people tell you what you should be doing sometimes. What I didn't do for a long time was listen.
Right. Which is interesting since you're in improv and that's a big part of improvisation. I love
what watching. They know.
I love watching improv groups. You know, it's just amazing to me how they can be so quick-witted and so so quick. But I want to go back to the thing that the National Association guy said, the NSA said, you know, take what you do and couch it in a keynote.
Yeah.
And I love that phrase, turn of phrase. I never heard that, couching in a keynote. And I think for listeners out there who might want to get into speaking a little bit, take your passion and couch it in a keynote and use a coach to learn how to actually create keynotes, right?
Right. What is it about what you do that would make for interesting storytelling, that has lessons that other people, even if they don't do what you do, can learn from? I'm not trying to get the audience to become improvisers. If someone's interested, I'll tell them more about how. But what I'm interested in them getting is, what were some of the lessons that I got that I can share with you? And then when they play the games, even for a little bit in the pairs in the audience, if we do that, then they get to experience and get a flavor for it, and it stays with them. Same with the speaking. The full circle on it is now I speak on speaking. So I just flew back. I just flew to Napa to give a speech to the city clerks of California. And I did a 75-minute speech on improving their speaking, because it comes up where they have to speak to the mayor or to the city council or to the press. And I was really flattered to hear. I waited a few days before contacting the event planners because she was busy. I said, how did it go? She goes, people were quoting you the whole rest of the week saying, oh, I just caught something Milo said I shouldn't do. And everybody laughed. So they related. So now I'm speaking on another expertise. So I did the couching thing again. Of course, having the book helped. I just cut the book down to a speech. So that helped.
Absolutely. So the book is Public Speaking, Get A's, Not Z's.
We don't want to be putting our audiences to sleep. And I had no interest or intention of writing a book. The reason it happened was people kept asking me, my clients from 2004 to 2007 kept asking me, is there a good book you can recommend? And I told you how I became a coach. I never read a book. So I started getting books and reading them, and I couldn't get through them. They were just so boring. So, and this is a topic I found interesting. I'm like, the book should be interesting. So I thought, I'm purposely going to write a book that I would want to read because it would be fun. So I did it all like David Letterman top 10 lists. The top 10 ways to blow it with your handouts. The top 10 ways to alienate your audience, and all these top 10 lists. And it's a great way to write a book, because I figured out all the chapter headings by all my top 10 lists. And then I made the list of 10. And then every day on my lunch hour, I just filled in the blanks on 2 or 3 of them until I had a book.
Fantastic. Yeah. I did the same thing. I came up with 10 chapters, and then you just start filling in, you have your 10 topics, and then you just start filling in the blanks. I want to read this book, actually. I'm going to pick up a copy of that for sure.
A lot of people told me they bought it to support me, and then they contacted me. They said, hey, by the way, I finished the book. I got so caught up in it and hearing your voice in my head that I was enjoying it so much that actually I read all the way through it. Because how long does it take to read a top 10 list? You have to get through the first two chapters. I'm getting a lot of background there. But after that, when the top 10 lists go, it's 4 or 5 pages, 6 pages on each one. So it's an easy read
Yeah.
and
And
funny.
that's huge kudos to say they actually read the book because, you know, most of us buy books and never read the book. We just have all these books on the shelves. I can't tell you how many of my clients have 5 to 10 to 20 organizing books, right? They just do. And I'm helping them clear them out because I'm like, have you read that one? Like, you don't
These
need
books are
that anymore.
disorganizing you.
You have me, you know, so you don't even no longer need the book. They're like, oh, phew, thank goodness. Because I think that, books on shelves are also guilt ridden. You know, it's like, I bought it, I used it, I should be reading it, I spent the money on it.
Yes.
Why am I not getting through it? And blah, 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 blah. Right.
What if
Yeah.
someday I decide I have the time and it's not going to happen if it hasn't by now?
Yeah, exactly. So, talk to me about, you told me about one client transformation. Talk to me about another client that you've had. In whatever line whatever
Sure.
capacity you were feeling at that point.
One comes to mind, and she lets me use her name. I usually use fake names, but Ellen has become such a testimonial on my site and everything that she lets me use her name. So Ellen works for the Coast Guard, and she called me up and she said, "Here's the story. Once a week at our staff meeting, we do that thing where we go around the table and share what's going on." And she said, "I always pray I'll be at the beginning of the circle." She goes, "I'm not going to be good no matter what. I'm going to be a babbling mess no matter what. But at least if I'm first, it's done. If I'm last, I'll sweat through my uniform before it gets to me, and I'll usually be worse for all the stress." She said, "I just need to be good enough that I can get through that." I was like, "Okay, we can get you to that." So we did. I mean, she got better and she learned what she didn't know because most of us were never really taught how to do this. We're winging it. And that's a shame because there are do's and don'ts and things we can learn and strategies. And she got really quite good at it. And one day her commanding officer said to her, "By the way, the admiral. There was a, yeah, the admiral is coming in, and he is going to be needing to be briefed about the Tijuana border situation. So you're going to do it." She said, No. I'm the one who was so nervous I had to hire a coach just to talk to my coworkers." He said, "Oh, I could care less if you're nervous. You're the best one here now. You're doing it." So she made a couple of points with me. We got ready for the admiral. She briefed the admiral, thinking, "Phew, that glad that's over with." He starts to leave, and then he turns around and goes, "By the way, she was very good. She should be the one to brief the congressman," and walks out. And Ellen says, "I don't want to brief a congressman." Commanding officer says, "You don't get to say no to the admiral." Another couple of visits to get ready for the congressman. He doesn't say anything on the way out the door. She goes, "Thank goodness that's over with." No, he writes an email. And he said, "She made the Tijuana border situation so clear to me, and it was so interesting the way she did it. She should brief the White House on my behalf." So in 3 steps, she went from her coworkers to Mike Mulvaney's office in the White House, and then another congressman. And after the second congressman, she was telling me how it went. And I said, "You haven't used the word nervous in talking about that day at all." She goes, "Oh, I think I was so excited to try out the new stuff, I forgot to be nervous." I said, "Did you even hear what you just said?" She said, "Oh, yeah, I think I may have conquered this." And she stayed with me. She comes back to me every once in a while to work on specific programs because I don't just work with fear up for people. I work with them continuing to make better delivery style and specifics of writing. She's an okay writer. I help her make it really good. And then she goes out there and kicks butt. So she comes back, but fear is just not even like on her to-do list for speaking anymore. She enjoys it because she learned how to play with it and she learned how to make the most of what she had, so it was no longer scary anymore.
I love it. Well, speaking of fear, that is the biggest obstacle to public speaking. So let's, can you give us a few steps of how to start getting over that fear factor if you have to present?
So I'm going to use an analogy for a minute and then we'll get to that. The analogy is if you were a diver and I was your diving coach and you were on the high board and you were scared to dive into the pool, I could come over to the side of the pool and talk to you about breathing techniques, relaxation techniques, visualizing success, self-hypnosis. But if there's no water in the pool, chances are nothing I say is going to make you feel any more comfortable and calm about diving into blue concrete. So my first step should not be to get you over the fear. The first step should be get you off that board and teach you how to use the hose and show you how to fill the pool so that by the time you get on the board the next time, when you're looking down at some nice soft water, not that much can go wrong. You might have some butterflies in the tummy, But it's not fear, it's just a little, you know, anxiety and excitement and everything else. So what is putting the water in the pool of public speaking? It's learning the right balance of stories and data. It's learning to use your face, your body, and your voice more effectively. It's learning how to create a through line so that you continue to pull people in, and all of a sudden they go, "Oh my gosh, was that 30 minutes? That flew by." It's telling stories more effectively. These are all learnable skills. It's not something I can just say, "Go do this." But those are the kinds of skills we want to be developing. And when someone is giving you the feedback to say what's working and what's not, then you know. Working in a vacuum is really hard. Like, please don't try things out on a spouse. Worst, at least find a friend. Spouses are the worst because they have but not also not your best friend. Find someone outside there if you aren't going to hire a coach. But a coach is going to make a big difference because I think sometimes half the value I bring to people is telling them, that's fine. Stop working on that. It's page three that's not right yet. Let's go to page three. So yes, we're working on page three, but I've also let them off the hook on pages one and two. They know they're okay with it, or I would have said something because people know I'm kind, but I'm honest. And we work, and then maybe if we get all the way to the end, we'll go, let's do it again. Let's fine-tune page one a little bit more, even though it was good enough. But by the time I say, that was really good, they know I mean it. And they get to feel it, and then they go out there and kick butt with it. I had that recently with a father of the bride. He brought me a terrible speech that he was delivering terribly. So, like, good thing you're my client now. And the first thing I had to help him, and this is a tip that you can make use of, is I saw a study. I'm backtracking, and then I'm going to come back to the point. I saw a study years ago that said that college students make a determination in the first 9 seconds they're listening to a professor whether they're glad they're in his class. So from the 10th second to the end of the semester, the best he can hope to do is change their mind. Harder to change someone's mind than to make an impression. So what do most people do with the first 9 seconds? Let's go back to that professor. Okay, this is Campus Center Room 375. This is Intro to Geology. The book is also called Intro to Geology. If you have them, I don't know, that's probably not more than 9 seconds right there. As compared to using those 9 seconds with something like this. The only thing that's on this planet now that was here 9 million years ago, that's going to be here in 9 million years, is rocks. How about we get to know them? Welcome to Intro to Geology. I'd be like, I'm down for rocks, right? What a difference. And yet so few people do that. They thank the crowd for coming. Then this was what the, now back to the wedding speech. Thank them for coming. You made an issue of the fact that everybody appreciated it, who came so far, blah, blah, blah. The same stuff we've heard a million times. So I said, I want you to throw all of that away. I want you to have a strong opening line. And we worked on a lot of other stuff, his delivery and rest. But his opening line, he came out, waited until it was almost quiet in the room because they were watching him. He was standing there. So I just waited out until it gets quieter. And then he says, it's hard to put in words the feelings that run through a young man's mind the first time he holds his baby daughter in his arms. And as he finished that sentence, the remaining noise in the room went nothing, silent. People stopped stirring, like, whoa. Like he is not wasting a moment. He is getting to the heart of this fast. And it just made such a difference. I saw the video of it. I was so proud of him because he'll be the first to admit he was pretty bland when we started. But then he started having fun with it. And the personality that we got one-on-one in talking, because he's got personality, finally started to show through because he got it. A lot of times people go, oh, I feel like if I'm practicing, I'm not being authentic. Well, if authentic is not good, do you want to be authentic or do you want to be good? So
Exactly.
it's a performance. Nobody ever watched Breaking Bad and said, oh, that Bryan Cranston, I don't think that's what he's like at all. He didn't seem authentic. No, he was playing a character. So, okay, it's not quite that, but it's a performance. It's a bigger version of you. And it's okay to do that. And then calm that down a little bit when you're one-on-one. Because nobody performs like they are in person, and that's fine. The audience wants a bit of a performance. If you had a choice between two speeches, and one was called A Speech on This Topic by Milo Shapiro, and the other one was called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About This Topic with Song and Dance and a Lot of Razzmatazz, and the ticket prices were the same, would anyone go to the first one? No, just make sure you're covering everything in that entertaining way.
I love the way you said it,
I don't
razzmatazz.
think I ever said it quite like that before. It just kind of
I love
happened.
it. I
Well,
love
you got to use your body, you know?
it. Because that is what it's all about, you know, is I mean, I think everything in this life is a speech and a sale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything that we do, you know, we hire a babysitter, speech and a sale, you know, I mean, you go to the grocery, could be speech and a sale. You never know when you're trying to find that perfect avocado or whatever. You know, I just think that the whole world is a stage. Yeah. Someone to be coined. And the better that you are, I mean, I know I've had a speech coach for the past 3 years, and you can't not benefit from learning how to speak, even if you're not a speaker. I mean, it's just what it is.
I've had so many people tell me this is helping me with my dating. This is helping me with job interviews. This is helping me with just interactions. I'm negotiating better because you know how to use your speaking style. Now, it is a lot harder when people say to me, what I want to do is get better at speaking one-on-one. Then I have to say to them, we're working on speaking skills, so we're going to practice it in the context of giving a speech, and we're going to let it trickle down into those. And we can do some exercises one-on-one. I certainly do that. But I don't start with one-on-one because it's just too hard to improve people in those little bits and bytes and starts and stops like that. But if they can give a great speech, it's certainly a lot easier to say one sentence or to learn how to join a conversation or how to ask questions. One of the things I end up talking a lot about is how to improve networking. Because there's so many things people do wrong in networking settings, both live and the, you get 40 seconds to talk about your business and you'll be the fifth one out of 10. And that's your time, which is not an elevator speech. That's different than an elevator speech. And that's a commercial. And people mix up the two and how they should approach each of them. I talk about both with my clients.
I love that. You're a wealth of information. So let's see. When you have a big success, you get off a stage or you get out of it. Well, you just came from one. How do you celebrate your successes?
Oh, what an interesting question. First, I deposit the check. That's a big celebration in and of itself. You know, I don't know that I do so much. I think I pace myself through the year and I do what I want to do. I know what my general budget for life is. And I do what I do when I want to do it. So sometimes the bank account goes down. Sometimes it catches up. Sometimes I'm being cheap with myself. Sometimes I splurge. I don't know that I too often do something to celebrate specific wins like that. I feel the celebration in my heart just driving home and feeling that good. So it's not like now I must go out to Ruth Chris for, you know, a big meal or something like that. I might have done that 2 weeks later during a slump. You never know.
Right. I asked that because I found myself, you know, publishing books, making big mountains, you know, accomplishing it, and then not doing anything about it or not even stopping to pause and say, good job, Kathy. So, yeah. So 2024 for me was a year of acknowledging celebrations and actually celebrating, like taking time to say, good job. Yeah. And breathe before moving on to the next thing. Yes, I'm like an ever ready bunny. So
I'm big on November gratitude, and there's no reason one needs to wait till November, but I have kind of a mental reminder starting November 1st that every day from then until Thanksgiving, I post something I'm grateful for. And sometimes what I do is I go back through my calendar and I see stuff that happened in February or March. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot how important that was to me because that's 10 months ago now. And I re-celebrate that. And also when I do my holiday letter, which I do as a website thing, it gives me a chance to take pictures, like things just January and February get lost to us by the time that comes around. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I do is to celebrate gratitude. It's like one of the reasons it drives me crazy when Christmas starts moving back into October. I'm like, don't lose Thanksgiving. What a wonderful concept and holiday. And I don't want it lost. I'm fine the day after, but just give me Thanksgiving.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Stop. Thanksgiving just gets blurred because they start Christmas in August now.
I know. I saw Christmas decorations up before Halloween this year. I said, stop it.
Oh, yeah. I saw
them in stores, in neighborhoods.
I saw them in September at Costco. You know, so seriously, you're going to be doing that? Like, what happened to Halloween? Never gets overlooked, but I totally agree with you. What happened to Thanksgiving? You know, oftentimes it just kind of, because it's not such a, except for food, there's not a big purchase situation, I suppose. So,
right. There's no marketing except by Ralph's.
No marketing, you know, and the turkeys are just gone. So,
oh, for people listening nationwide, Ralph's is a supermarket chain here. You know, it's very easy to do. That's one of the things I talked about up in Napa in this speech was ways that you could lose your audience, and local references is one of them, or timely references, or American references if it's an international conference. I spoke at the American Society of Training and Development. First word's American, Nobody told me it was the International Conference of the American Society of Training and Development. And I was the first speaker on the first day. So I didn't even have a chance to mill about and discover how international. And I made a number of references to Gloria Steinem at a point in my speech. And the story makes sense and it works very well there. And afterwards, someone came up to me and he said, I enjoyed your speech very much, but can you please tell me who is this Gloria Steinem you kept talking about? And that's when I found out that most of my audience probably had no idea who she was. And now enough time has passed that even in an all-American audience, I wouldn't assume the younger audience knows who she is either. So I haven't taken that story out. I started with a small explanation of who she is, and then I go into the story and how it affects what I wanted to say about her. Small difference, but all the difference in the world if you don't know who Gloria Steinem is, to feel left out.
Yeah, absolutely. Then the whole time, then maybe you've lost and was just wondering, who is this lady?
Yep.
She must be very important. What does she do?
Yeah. And because she's a political character, there are people in the audience. I used her in a speech in Texas one time. And somebody came to me and said, kind of surprised you had the guts to talk about Gloria Steinem in this crowd. I'm like, is that not okay? Bit liberal to talk about. I was like, but I wasn't talking about her politics. That was what I thought was interesting. I was talking specifically just about the fact that the Equal Rights Amendment didn't pass in the 70s, but that even though it didn't, many counties and states and corporations have chosen to create equal rights policies for them. I was talking about how when one thing doesn't work, other things come out of it. And yet they were like, I wouldn't have given that speech here in Houston. That was gutsy. So something to be conscious of too is who is your audience? And because I don't go political, I just didn't think of that as political in that sense.
Right. And it was pretty, it was political, I'd have to say.
Yeah, in retrospect, I realized the person was probably right.
Yeah, you talk about riots. Okay, interesting. So if you had to look, I mean, you've had several alliterations and now you're back full circle doing all the things that you love and that you're good at. If you had to tell your 18-year-old self advice, if you had to give yourself advice, what would you tell that young man?
Ooh, wow. Be willing to make more mistakes. I was too much of a, not that I was a perfectionist, but that I couldn't outright fail. And when I did accept I kind of told that story like, oh, I think I'm going to go off and do this thing. It was not that simple. It was not sleeping, not eating, almost making myself sick at the thought of walking away from the career that I went to college for, the guilt that my parents paid for my college years, and I wasn't going to do any more what they paid for, and all this. It was really a very difficult thing. And then I took a personal improvement course, and they were talking about something, and it wasn't exactly that. But you know how you hear what you need to hear? And what I heard and what he said is, if you do this and you fail, it doesn't mean anything about you. No one is going to think, what an idiot, you quit your great job and tried this thing. They're going to think, oh, it's too bad that didn't work for him, or good for him for trying. But I was so caught up on some of it, wasn't aware of it, in worrying about what other people would think if I failed, that was stopping me from going, then I'll get another IT job. Life will go on. I won't get as much vacation time. And maybe I won't start as quite as high a salary. But it wasn't going to be the end of the world if I failed, and yet I didn't get that on a deeper level. So this course really changed that for me.
Yeah, and I think that the younger we are, the more import we put on things. You know, the more it's a big, bad, looming decision. You know, because we haven't had enough years to realize it. You know, these are small little shifts that appear huge at the time, and they're always retractable. Yeah. There are always, you can always change. And in fact, change is the one constant thing in life anyhow. So you can't not change even if you wanted to.
Yep. Here's another one too. The idea that everyone has to like me. Oh man, that was a hard one. I still remember someone from my last job. I still remember his name. It's been probably 30 years since I've seen him. And he did not like me. To this day, I don't know why. But it really just ate at me that Jay, I'll call him Jay because it was his first initial, that Jay didn't like me. And I tried to be kinder and I tried to be helpful and I tried to do all, and nothing. And now I look back on it and go, why did I care what he thought? He was kind of a jerk. Not for not just liking me, he just was kind of a jerk. But yeah. I couldn't deal with it. And now, as I've gotten older, there have been times when I'm like, wow, that person clearly doesn't like me. Too bad. Their loss. or just not compatible, whatever, move on. And it releases a lot of energy to not have to feel compelled to be everyone's cup of tea. And in business, I shouldn't be everyone's cup of tea. That's one of the things I say about improv is if you try to do something you're sure will appeal to your entire audience, you're likely to entertain nobody. Not saying you should offend everybody, but some people shouldn't like it. And my keynotes too. The opening I did on my keynote this time was very risky. I did something where I came out and purposely spoke really badly until the audience looked a little uncomfortably. And then I had PowerPoint words up there that said, "Holy cow, this guy's terrible. I can't watch him for an hour." It was just a fun little opening. And enough people laughed that it worked. But there were probably some people who were rolling their eyes and thought it was corny. As long as that's only 10 to 15% of the audience, if the other 85% are laughing and thinking this guy's kind of going to be kind of fun, this isn't going to be a standard boring speech, it's worth 15% of the audience going, rather than not entertaining 85%.
Back to that setting the stage in the first 9 seconds. It's interesting you said 9 seconds. You know, as a stylist, I know it's 3 to 4 seconds for people to judge you on how you look, whether you're going to be safe or whatever.
Yeah, you don't
And
need 9 seconds for that. Do that. It's boom, I can see her.
And at 9 seconds, you do have to hear a few words to say, okay, yeah, this is going to be a ho-hum speech right there. That's why opening lines are so important.
Yeah, and intros too, because we don't have any control over who introduces us. So I actually work sometimes with the person who's introducing me to give them some tips and some ideas and ways to try and make it lively. Because if someone just drags the audience down before you ever get there, what are you going to do? I mean, look how comedians try and get the best paid person is the host who opens and does the little bits in between, usually more so than the headliner, because that's so important that the audience not be turned off before the first person ever gets out there. That's what's happening with my introducer sometimes. And I felt like I was following Johnny Carson sometimes. And I felt like I was following, I don't even come up with the name of a bad speaker, but someone who just made me feel like, well, now I have to work uphill. Thanks for that. And I've even said to the meeting planner on occasion, is that person a good speaker? Is that a good choice for introducing me? And once in a while, the person will stop and go, maybe we'll ask Nick. Yes, I don't know who Nick is, but just since you thought that, I have a feeling Nick would be a better choice. Some people just, I mean, if I worked with the person professionally, I could make them good, but I don't have that right. They're the person running the conference, and I've just met them in most cases.
It's a definite problem. How do you feel about having video intros before you hit the stage?
I've only seen it a couple of times, and I think it can actually be good. It depends on if it's well done, if it suits the person. The risk is if you put a lot of glitz into the opening, you better measure up to it. So if you're a step down from your intro, it's a bad thing. But if you're a bubbly, lively person and that sets people up to expect it, sure, why not?
I've been considering doing that because I've had a few dud intros as of late, and you're right, it's an uphill battle.
But the question is, do you get in a voiceover or is it you? And so that's two different ways. I mean, me introducing me, I'd have to see if I could like that. Yeah.
The ones I've seen that are really well done are clips of the speaker, a narrator, and just an introduction of accomplishments, and then but this they show the speaker speaking in front of an audience, and then they're like, and hey, and welcome da,
Yeah.
da, da, to the stage, and then
And I
she
think for me, I
runs
would probably. I'm
up
sorry, I missed the end of what you said. We spoke over each other.
and then she runs up on stage and she starts a speech.
Yeah, I could see that really working. For me, I would probably want it to be a woman's voice to have that contrast. For you, I would say, again, I think in general, contrast is good unless you know you're mostly speaking to women's audiences, in which case I would have a woman introduce you. But for me, I would think I like that vocal variety difference. And I've often said to people, there is no more, for as much as we can improve our vocal variety, there is no better vocal variety than two people speaking. So there are times it's better to cut to someone and let them talk for a minute. Not in a keynote, obviously, but in situations where that can happen, where you can play off someone, you can get someone to ask you a question, find someone with a different voice, and it can be really powerful, or do a different voice. When I do characters in my stories, and I almost always do characters in my stories, they never sound like me. It creates all kinds of opportunities. When grandpa is talking in my stories, it's always this. And you know, any time from that point on in my story, when I do this, it's grandpa talking. Did my grandfather talk like that? Yes, New York accent, but he didn't have a gravelly accent. His voice was actually extremely similar to mine, except I no longer have that thick accent that I used to have. But I do that with him because then a couple of things happen. It's vocal variety, and I never have to say, and then I said, and then he said, and then I said. It's just so clear when I say, why don't you sit down on the bed for a minute? We can talk. Mom just said dinner is ready. Yeah, but sit down for just a minute. All the he said, I said stuff goes away. It's obvious with the change of voice and that little turn of head that I do, or full body if I'm on stage.
Wow, you're so good. You're such a pro.
It's finding those opportunities and people miss them. So they'll read something and I'll go, here's what I think you should do with it. And over again, what I've heard for, what is it, 20 years of coaching, 24 years in business is, how did you come up with that? I never would have thought of that. Well, 35 years of improv will teach you how to, what else can we do with something? How can we twist it? Where else? Or I like what you said. It's not a good intro. Move that down, move this up, say this. So by the time you get to this, it's way more interesting and we're excited to hear it. I had one client who started out telling the story. She had a trauma when she was 8, 9 years old. So she started her story from the beginning when she was 5 or 6. Not interesting. It was a very average life and learning about her life. I was like, okay. By the time she got to the trauma, she had to win the audience back. So we made her story start a little later and gave her a different introduction that was really intriguing so that people were like, whoa, what? And now you're going to backpedal? Okay, I'm going to listen through this to see how that relates to this. And it's more than I can go into right now, but totally changed it. And she said, thank you. She said, I saw the difference in the audience reaction because she had done the speech numerous times. The new version, completely different.
Love it. Love it. Well, I know that you have something to offer the listeners here. What is it that we're going to provide? They can do a download or call, or what are you offering, Milo?
Sure. Yeah, I was happy you asked if I would be willing to, and that was fine. My initial appointments are very separate from the rest of the coaching. We do an analysis. We do a whole back and forth. It's not like Myers-Briggs or one of those other assessments. This is very specifically on speaking skills. And in that appointment, a lot of people come up going, I didn't even know there were this many questions to ask. I know a lot more about myself and what my goals to improve are. And then if they choose to work with me, so do I. The second part is I teach something called the 4 steps to successful speech structure. It throws the old model that goes back to the 1940s out the window. It's still being taught so many places, including Toastmasters in some cases. And that all comes in your initial consultation. After that, if you choose to continue, then it's more about doing feedback and stuff. So coming back to your question, I'm offering 10% off on initial consultations in case someone wants to try the assessment and learn the 4 steps. And if they want to go off on their own after that, they can, if they want to choose to continue with me after that. But if you just mention Kathy Burns when you write at my intake form. So the best way to reach me is to go to publicdynamics.com, go to the contact form, fill it out, and just in there's an area that says like anything else you want to tell me, but Kathy Burns with an exclamation point.
All right, Kathy Burns, you got it.
You don't even
10%
have to spell Kathy right, but if you want to spell it right, it's with an I
Yes, and a K, and a K.
and a K. That's right, I should point that out.
All right,
And Burns with a U.
it's been fantastic. I really appreciate speaking with you, and I love, of course, listening to you speak.
Thank you.
You're such a pro on this, and always entertaining. And it's a pleasure. I'm so glad that we finally got this podcast time right, and we.
Right.
I look forward to seeing what happens with you next. I'm watching you. Got my eye
All right.
on
I'll
you.
come back in a year and tell you what's different.
You got it. You got it. Thanks, Milo. And thanks,
Bye-bye.
everybody, for joining us on Organize and Energize the podcast. Join us next week. We'll be back, same time, same bat channel. And if you like it, go ahead and give us a thumbs up on YouTube. If you like it, give us a yes on any platform that you're watching, because you can watch it on any platform at all. I'd appreciate the kudos and the comments. Thanks, Milo. Take care. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to hear more, feel free to subscribe on the platform of your choice. Also, if you feel so inclined, I would truly appreciate a good rating from you to me. Have a stellar day.